This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
Hi, this is Jen Rubin, and this is Jen Rubin's Green Room. Welcome back to the show. The Democratic governor of Maryland, Governor Moore, announced that 175,000 convictions for low-level marijuana possession would be wiped out. That covers about 100,000 people who will no longer have a conviction marring their records. And as you may know, a conviction for any kind of felony may bar them from employment, may bar them from renting or owning in certain places. And it is a great relief that people who are primarily Black and brown will no longer have this cloud hanging over their heads. Now, other states need to do the same. And most importantly, because there are many states that will never do this, I'm looking at you, red states in the Deep South, those other states that are more progressive that want to advance social justice have to ban the box. The box being that little form and that little checkbox you check when you are asked on an employment application if you have ever been convicted of a felony. Well, I can understand that you would want to be required to reveal a violent felony or even a financial penalty and felony if you are applying for example, a job at a bank. But for low-level marijuana use, why should anyone be denied work because of that? So ban the box, extend a pardon to those people who have been convicted. It is a huge step forward for social justice. In contrast to, yes, Donald Trump, who in addition to labeling the great city of Milwaukee, which will host his convention, a horrible place, and deciding he won't stay there, he's going to stay in Chicago, explain that one to me, is of course pursuing a no-holds-bar attack on the Constitution, on undocumented immigrants, on really every aspect of American society through his Project 2025. And we do have that debate coming up next week, and I think it would behoove the president to mention what is in that horrendous document. It's not just banning mifepristone. It's not just banning abortion. It's cutting Social Security. It's rounding up 11 million or so people, and it won't be just undocumented people because, of course, the authorities will make mistakes and they will round up and put in camps, yes, camps, people who are U.S. citizens or otherwise legal to be here and then deport them. He's bringing back the Muslim ban. Yes, he is contemplating using the military to suppress domestic dissent. On and on it goes. And you don't have to believe me. Listen to Mark Esper, who was for a time the defense secretary. He's come out and said, Donald Trump was talking about executing his own aides. He was talking about using the military to fire on American citizens. This is the contrast between one party and one president who is pursuing racial justice, economic justice, is looking to advance the lives of all Americans, and Donald Trump on the other side, who is clearly a white nationalist, clearly an anti-Semite, who is advancing an agenda that will make America unlivable. And you know who's going to help him if he gets reelected? his Supreme Court, because we know what that Supreme Court, as the president said, the upside down flag waving pair of them and the rest of the right wing justices believe, they are busy ripping out of the Constitution rights and privileges we thought were long established, whether it is abortion, whether it's the power for agencies like the EPA to regulate pollution. It is the most extreme agenda, and Donald Trump could well have more justices to appoint should he get another 4 years. The thought of that is absolutely horrifying. So the president has many things to talk about next week, and as we get closer, I'll make some more suggestions. But I think it's time for Democrats, independents, to stop playing this game that Biden's too old, that all politicians are the same, that they don't like politics. This is about your lives and the lives of people who are far more vulnerable than some of the people whining and complaining that they don't have their perfect candidate. I'm sorry if President Biden doesn't exactly match up as your perfect candidate. I've yet to have a president who was my perfect candidate. But he is so infinitely preferable to the alternative. And the alternative is so dangerous, so hateful, so unfit for the presidency that it should be obvious. And I still find it difficult, as many of you do, to understand why any thinking person would even consider Donald Trump. And remember, we have a few big events coming up this summer. First, we do have the debate if Donald Trump shows up. I don't know. What about you? You think he's going to show up? I kind of think he's going to worm his way out. I think he, at some level, knows that he can't really get through 90 minutes without babbling, and he is not equipped to speak in 2-minute increments in any way that sounds remotely coherent. But be that as it may, there's the debate. Then on July 11, he appears before the judge in his New York case in which he was convicted of 31 counts of falsifying business records, and he gets sentenced. Will he get any kind of jail time? I hope so. He certainly deserves it. 34 counts is a lot of counts, and the judge is allowed to consider things like his character, like his prior bad acts. For example, he was civilly adjudicated for raping E. Jean Carroll. They're allowed to consider, judges are, his conduct during the trial, which was horrific. 10 counts of contempt of court. So he may yet get sentenced. And then, of course, he goes off to his convention in Milwaukee, of all places. I fear that that's going to most closely resemble nothing more than a Nazi rally. These people are virulently anti-immigrant, anti-Black, anti-women, for that matter. And you're going to see the same psychotic cult worship that you see in those grainy images from Europe in the 1930s. That's what this guy is about, and that's who his followers are. So I hope Americans get a good look at what their alternatives are this summer. Later in the summer, in August, we're going to see President Biden and Vice President Harris, and they're going to present a coherent, popular platform. And they're going to present themselves as coherent, empathetic, sane individuals. And I want to say a few words about Vice President Harris, who has gotten a really bad rap early, mostly, in her vice presidency. And the press has then decided she's not worth following or it's not worthwhile to revisit her record and has kind of blown her off at this point. I want to say I attended an event at the White House on Monday. It was actually at the Executive Office Building, which was a new initiative by the administration on violence against women using rape, for example, in wartime. That has been a tactic as old as history itself, and it is rampant, not only as we have seen in Israel and inflicted on the hostages in Gaza, but really around the globe, Sudan, Haiti, Ukraine. The vice president spoke passionately about this and introduced a group of survivors who have undergone the ordeal of sexual violence. And she was quite impassioned, quite articulate on the issue. And this is really very much in keeping with, I think, her newfound confidence and her ability to articulate, in particular, issues having to do with women and social and racial justice. She has been an outspoken critic of the Supreme Court, and we are coming up on the 2-year anniversary of the infamous Dobbs decision. You're going to see her appearing at many events. And I think if you watch her, if you spend some time not remembering what you read maybe a year or two ago, but actually watching her and listening to her, you'll come away quite impressed. And I think the coverage is long overdue for some revisionism, although the press is not known for rethinking its biases and preconceptions. So there you have it. We have a dangerous world. We have a dangerous movement in this country that is akin to right-wing movements in Europe that are threatening destabilization. And I hope that voters here, just like the voters in the UK, who are going to deal the Conservative Party there a thrashing, will come to their senses and understand that, at least in America, we really don't have a conservative movement. We have a center-left political party, and we have a fascist party. And that should be the easiest decision that anyone has to make this November.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
We have so many issues involving national security these days that really go to something even beyond national security. They go to the character of America. Do we want to be a leader on the world stage that defends democracy and human rights and concepts like territorial integrity? Do we want to be a leader in bilateral and multilateral relationships, which increase the security and prosperity of Americans? Or do we want to become an isolationist country, and even worse, a handmaiden to the worst regimes around the globe, North Korea, China, Russia? Well, we're certainly going to have a choice coming up in 2024, because one president, and there are two presidents running, one president, the current one, speaks from a position of a bipartisan tradition that has existed for about 70, 80 years now. And that's the position that says America's, by and large, a force for good in the world. Yes, we make mistakes. Yes, we've done things that we should not be proud of. But by and large, and in particular, in the wake of World War II, we have acted as a stabilizing force. We've acted to protect trade and international commerce. We've acted in defense of democracy. We've opposed aggressors. We have made certain that there are institutional structures to bring to bear on those countries, regimes, and leaders who violate the basic rules of international law. In other words, we've been on the side of the good guys, but that is not a given. And it is horrible to think that America, rather than being allied with our Democratic friends, could be in opposition to them. But that's very, very possible if Donald Trump gets back into office, because he doesn't think in terms of democracy and authoritarianism. He thinks in terms of, do they like me? And of course, the dictators, the authoritarians, are very capable of sucking up to him, of ingratiating themselves, of flattering him, so that he comes away with the impression that Vladimir Putin is a great guy, that Kim Jong-un is a great guy, because they say nice things about him. If this sounds childish and insane, it is. But you have to remember that Donald Trump is not a sane character. So, what do we do about it? How do we prevent this? How does the military react to this possibility? Well, we have a great guest who can clarify all of this. Amy McGrath was a former member of the House of Representatives. She had a distinguished career as a pilot, served multiple tours of duty in wars against terrorism overseas, has run for Senate, unfortunately did not defeat Mitch McConnell. Think what a better world we would live in if she had been successful. And has since committed herself to helping to elect former military individuals, some of which who have been our strongest members of the House and of the Senate. So welcome to the show, Amy.
Hey, good to be with you.
It is great to chat with you. We talked many moons ago when you were a baby congressperson, and now you're out the other end and do not have to serve with the likes of Matt Gaetz and Mike Johnson, which I'm sure keeps your sanity in check. Let's start with Donald Trump's attitude towards the military. He expresses a level of contempt and almost anger towards the military that we have never had from a president of the United States. It is stunning to me. Is that perceived in the military? Do they see that? Do they hear that? Do they worry about it?
That's a good question. I think definitely at the higher ranks, they are seeing that. Many are appalled at how he treats veterans. You know, those people who are in the military, Jen, can't really speak out right in public about these things. But I know a ton of retired folks who are appalled. And the fact that you would even call for the execution or think about the execution of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff in our country is just, you know, terrible. The fact that your own chief of staff, former chief of staff, who happens to be a retired four-star Marine Corps general, has said that you looked at the graves or considered the graves of our American war dead in Europe as, well, why should I go there and pay my respects? These guys were all suckers and losers. I mean, it's like against the very fabric of America. And for a lot of people who are retired or veterans, those people in the military, it's appalling. On the other hand, you know, look, the military is a swath of society. And as many people that are in the military is just like society. They get pulled in by Fox News. They get pulled in by misinformation. They, you know, a lot of people like the strongman type of attitude that appeals to them. So, you know, it's mixed.
It really is. You know, it's interesting you should mention, his former colleagues. You know, voters don't have to believe Amy McGrath or Jen Rubin. I never remember former secretaries of defense, former secretaries of state, former vice presidents who served with him. Virtually everyone who was in a position of authority has come out against him. There are a lot of people who make the excuse, well, if he gets back, it won't be so bad. because we had people before who kind of kept things from going off the tracks. What do you say to those people who think that somehow we're going to have, you know, even a John Bolton or a Mark Esper or any one of these people back watching the store?
Yeah, the guardrails are going to be off. Look, Trump is not dumb. He has learned from the first administration. He had the Mark Espers, he had the Jim Mattises as secretaries of defense, he had the John Kellys and some of these folks who really do believe in our country and believe in our Constitution and took their jobs seriously and pushed back against Trump's inclination to use the United States military against peaceful protesters in America, Americans executed, having their constitutional right to be heard. He wanted to use the U.S. military to violently squash that. And Mark Esper said, no, Mr. President, you can't do that. You know, Trump would get rid of all those people. He, on day one, he wouldn't even have them in office. He wouldn't even have them surrounding him. And you'd be surrounded by the Steve Bannons of the world, the Cash Patels, the most extreme people who would basically tell him he can do whatever he wants. And the problem there, of course, is the military, our military has not fully been tested with that kind of sort of rogue, how do I say this, anti-normal behavior from a president on down. We've always had some guardrails there. And our military, I believe, obviously has very smart individuals, but it would be extreme testing of our military because there's not a ton of rules when it comes to presidential power if you have a rogue president with a Congress that would go with him.
I think that's such an important point because one of the values that our military does hold is that we have civilian control of the military, that the civilians are ultimately responsible to the voters, and that the president issues an order. They can advise, they can warn, but generally they are obligated to follow. So what do they do if the president says to the head of CENTCOM or the head of the Joint Chiefs, pull all your guys out of Europe. We don't want any troops still in Europe. They don't really have a choice, do they?
They don't. And I mean, Congress has tried to push back on some of this stuff. You know, Congress is passing legislation to make sure that we don't pull out of NATO and that sort of thing. But really, none of that stuff has been tested. And the military would be put in a very difficult position because you have the commander in chief basically giving them a lawful order. Pull back, or even worse. I don't want to say even worse, but on a different angle, using our National Guard, for example, against civilians. You know, the president doesn't like say there's a women's march, and the president doesn't like that. So maybe he doesn't go full up and say, "Hey, I don't want there doesn't need to be violence," but maybe we'll just have some attack helicopters fly low and scare the crap out of protesters. I mean, what does the military do then? Right. It's a lawful order, right? I mean, he could make up something that says they need to do it for whatever reason, for law enforcement or something like that. And like I said, the military kind of has to follow orders if they're lawful.
Right.
And who decides whether it's lawful or not is a kind of a hairy situation within the military. So it's
it really is.
Tough.
And it reminds me back when Bob Corker was still in office, one of the now vanished breed of Republicans who was responsible and normal. He held a hearing on use of nuclear weapons. And he wanted to explore whether if the president ordered his military to go nuke a country because he didn't like the cut of their jib, whether there was anything to prevent them. And the hearing was petrifying.
Yeah.
Because on one hand, they are obligated to disobey an illegal order. On the other hand, figuring out if the use of nuclear weapons in a given situation is in fact a violation of the rules of war is not an easy decision. And they're going to have people like Cal Patel and all the rest of them saying, no, this is legal. Go ahead, do it. In fact, we're going to prosecute you if you don't. We're going to court-martial you if you don't. So we're just begging to have, it would seem, a complete constitutional meltdown when these kinds of crises arise.
Yeah, and go back to the Trump administration and when he was tweeting with Kim Jong-un about the size of our nuclear arsenal or whatever it is. I mean, it's really scary stuff from a man who's just kind of, like, first of all, when he was debating trying to become a presidential candidate, he didn't even know what the nuclear triad was. So clearly the guy doesn't even understand deterrence or nuclear weapons to begin with. And then to just kind of go do that back and forth. I mean, anybody that understands international security knows how just horrifyingly dangerous these types of scenarios can be. And if you don't understand it, I would say go get this book called Nuclear War, A Scenario by a woman named Annie Jacobson, who just wrote this book. I mean, it is like how quickly some of these things could get out of control with just, you know, even a president that is normal.
Right.
Not to mention one that is like Donald Trump. It's very scary.
Exactly. And the ability for these things to spin out of control because the other side suddenly misinterprets what we're saying or believes that they are in imminent danger can set off a series of events that is truly petrifying. Let me switch gears to something more normal, which was the President of the United States going to Europe for the 80th anniversary of D-Day. From a position of someone who has served in the military, what was your impression of those commemorations? And what were you thinking of when you saw these gentlemen who were, and few women, who were now in their high 90s, some of them over 100, who were the ones who stormed those beaches, who went up the cliffs, who battled through the hedgerows in France? What was your kind of overall impression of what happened there?
Well, number one, I was enormously grateful and thankful that we had Joe Biden representing America and proud of that. I would just be terrible to have Donald Trump representing America during that time. I look at those gentlemen, this is the greatest generation that literally built the world that we are fortunate to have inherited. And it's on our watch now, my generation, our generation. And we can't, you know, give up all the gains that we have made. We had, you know, prior to World War II, we had a strategy of sort of isolationism, right? We weren't going to engage in the world. We didn't want to have alliances. We didn't, that was their problem over there. We're not going to get involved. That strategy failed spectacularly twice. The first time it resulted in World War I, the second time it resulted in World War II. And the greatest generation that stormed the beaches of Normandy fought that battle with their blood and their lives and to build what we have today. And for the last 75 years, we have enjoyed the longest time of peace and prosperity between major powers, really, in world history. And that is because America has engaged in the world. We learned that lesson. Hey, that strategy of isolationism doesn't really work so well. We need to be a force in the world. And the greatest generation gets that. So when I saw them, Jen, it reminded me, one, of their sacrifice, but two, it was almost like, I want to make sure that we don't screw it up.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like if you've ever seen that movie in Saving Private Ryan, when, you know, the gentleman goes to the graves at the end, that he looks at the folks that fought with him and he said, gosh, you know, did I earn this life?
Yeah.
That I was so fortunate that these guys didn't get, I got. I look at that as somebody who, you know, I'm in my late 40s and I still look at that and I'm like, man, did we earn this?
Yeah.
Exactly. We can't be asked to do what they did. We're not asked to do what they did.
Right.
But we damn well are asked to stand up during the threats that face us today. And one of the biggest national security threats we have today is Donald Trump and the anti-democracy movement in our country.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
We had a battle royale that went over 6 or 9 months to get Republicans in Congress to finally authorize the next tranche of aid to Ukraine. And I did a piece a while back, which I'll put it in the show notes, documenting the hardship that that delay inflicted on Ukrainians. They had to parcel out their ammunition. They could not defend certain cities. Certainly people died. Territory was lost. You served with some of these people in Congress. What in the world do you think they were thinking?
Well, I certainly ran against some of these people in Congress.
You
that's sure,
for sure.
I feel like what you're asking is, why are these Republicans wavering in standing up
right
for Ukraine? And I feel like the Republican Party today is basically in two camps. The one camp is your J.D. Vance, your Tommy Tuberville, your full-on pro-Putin, Russian propaganda, let's pull away from the world, you know, become isolation, hold up aid to Ukraine, you know, your full-on MAGA folks. They're not the majority. They're in power,
right?
But they're not the majority. The majority is actually one that I think is a good example of this is Mitch McConnell, who I ran against. Mitch McConnell, a couple of weeks ago, wrote an op-ed in the New York Times that basically said we cannot repeat the mistakes of the 1930s. We warn against appeasement. We have to stand up for Ukraine. We have to stand up for authoritarianism. We cannot go away from our global responsibilities. I read that op-ed and I was like, yeah,
right.
You're right. The problem is Mitch McConnell and his wing then turn around and endorse the very guy that rejects all those lofty principles.
Exactly. What do they think will happen?
And so the question is why? Well, the reason why is simply party over country.
Yeah.
And that has been the biggest disappointment, I think, in my adult lifetime when it comes to American leadership and political leadership. You know, I grew up within the military. We respected the Republican Party big time. They were the party of national security. They were the party of the military, the party of veterans, the party of John McCain. That party has done a 180.
Yeah.
And it's not so much the J.D. Vances or the Tommy Tuberville's, because they're out there and they're crazy. You know, the Rand Pauls of the world, right? They're out there. It's the Mitch McConnells that have disappointed me the most.
Right.
Because they have not been able to stand up. They basically looked and said, I value my position within this party more than I value the principles that I once said that I cared about.
Right.
And I think that's been shown with all of these rest of these Republicans who are unable to stand up when they know what's right. They just can't do it.
You and many others who have served in national security positions, whether it was the military, whether it was the CIA, have chosen to run for office. And to a person, whether it's Abigail Spanberger, who was in your same class in 2018, or Elise Slotkin, who's now running for Senate in Michigan, they all describe running for public office in the same vein that they offered themselves for service in the military, that this was an act of public service. You have worked to elect more people with national security experience. Tell me why that is and how that's worked out.
I really believe that people who have served this country and sort of growing up serving the country and didn't grow up within a political party can put country above their political party when there's matters of national security. And I know that's not always the case, but I believe that fundamentally they're more likely to be able to do that because we served on the battlefield together. You know, we didn't have a red jersey or a blue jersey when we wore the uniform of the United States Marine Corps. In many cases, most of the guys I served with, they didn't even know what party I was. And frankly, I was an independent for most of my time. So it didn't really matter. Never came up. We might have talked to individual in issues here and there, but we never really, it wasn't partisan. It wasn't like I want my Republicans to win or I want the Democrats to lose or whatever. And I just feel like going forward, we need people that understand that holding an elected office of that nature, you swear an oath. You swear an oath to the Constitution of the United States to defend it. It's the same oath that we swear in the military. And so to me, we take that seriously. People that go in the military, I've lost friends in Afghanistan. I've lost friends in Iraq. That matters. And I feel like going to Capitol Hill and having that kind of attitude of like, hey, you know, we may not agree on student loan debt relief, but when it comes to matters of national security, we're going to protect this country. When it comes to our democracy, we're going to protect this country and do what we think is right, even if it's against our party. That's the difference.
And you hope that sense does prevail. One of the other things that I worry about is that young people have sort of given up on politics in general. Not the sort of people who go into the military right after high school or, you know, go to officer training school, but the people who have just grown up in good old civilian America. They haven't had to serve. Maybe nobody in their family has had to serve. How do you talk to those people? And what do you think of some kind of mandatory national service? I know the idea of conscription is not one that the military favors because they have to take everyone then. And for all the downsides, the volunteer military has performed magnificently. We have the finest military, not only on the globe, but in history. But what do you say to young people? And would some kind of national service help them to appreciate something more than politics and to appreciate the necessity of defending our institutions?
Yeah, I'll answer the national service question last, but and that's very important. But I think your first question is really important too about young people. I actually believe young people are just as patriotic as I was at that age, and it is, you know, and just as patriotic as the greatest generation at their age. The challenge is to make sure that we continue to talk to them. And I that's why civics education is so important. That's why I actually think history is so important. You know, there's a big focus on STEM, and I get that with the schools and the out competing for tech in the future. We cannot forget about teaching our children about history, how we got to where we are, because there's a big authoritarian push, not only here in America, but also around the world with China and Russia. A lot of propaganda, and that propaganda that comes out is pushing things like fear and cynicism and apathy. Apathy, meaning like your vote doesn't matter, elections are all rigged, America is in decline, you know, go out, it's go all out for yourself. And we really have to push back on that, because that authoritarian propaganda is real. And I think those of us that really love our country have to continue to talk to young Americans about freedom, about progress, about being strength, and about community, and why that's so important. So that's sort of my answer to that. It's just a constant struggle, and it's even more than what I had to deal with when I was a kid.
Right.
With regards to the national service, I'm a proponent of national service. I'm a proponent of voluntary national service. And expanding what we have, you know, we have AmeriCorps. We could expand that tremendously, 3-4 times the size of what we have right now. I think that would be beneficial for our country. Why? Well, for one, I mean, you talk about student loan debt. I mean, we here in Kentucky, you know, we would love to have teachers in some of these rural areas. Love to be able to have medical workers in some of these. I mean, you could serve your country, in my belief, doing some of these national service projects and also getting education back in exchange, right. One for one, just like we do in the military.
Yeah.
You know, and I think there's lots of ways to serve your country, not just in the military, bearing arms and wearing the uniform of a soldier or sailor or a Marine. And if we had smart people in Congress, we could pass legislation that would really be an investment. Would it cost something? Sure. But it would be an investment in our future.
That's a big if about having smart people in Congress. But, you know, I think one of the other benefits that isn't talked about as much is that we get so siloed in our own communities. You know, we've segregated ourselves not only by party, but by geography, so that it's very easy to caricature, oh, those other people. If you're in San Francisco, it's, oh, those people in the South. And if you live in the South, it's, oh, those people in San Francisco. If you actually had to go and live someplace else and work with those people, you would find common values and common bounds. Because, as you know, because you travel all over the country, people are people. And there are good people in every single part of America, and they should be introduced to one another and should be able to build a future.
Yeah.
I want to go back to your origins in the military, just to show people, because we take everything for granted and people's memory begins yesterday. When you first wanted to go into the military, the job you had eventually was not one that was open to women. Tell the audience a little bit about your goal to be a pilot and how things literally changed just in the nick of time for you to have your opportunity to do what you had dreamed in your young life that you wanted to do.
Yeah, it's funny you asked that question, because I was just this past week looking through an old trunk of stuff from my high school days that my husband had pulled out of the attic. And in there was a letter from the then chief of naval operations when I was 17 years old. His name was Admiral Kelso. And he wrote me a letter that basically said, hey, you all the job for what you want to do is going to be open. And that was so significant back then. When I was, you know, junior high, I wanted to fly fighter jets. I basically had this crazy dream when I was like 12 years old. And I back then we didn't have the internet, right? So what do? You go to the library, you pull all the books out that you can, you know, find. And I did some research and I found there were no women doing these jobs. And I was like, well, that's stupid, because this is a really cool job. Like, there's no woman that wants to do this. That's like, that's not true. Like, how has that happened? And I learned that there was a federal law prohibiting women from doing this job. And I did not understand that. I remember going to my mom and saying, Mom, you know, what's a law? Like, just get rid of the law, Mom. How do we get rid of the law? And my mom saying, okay, well, you can't do that. You're a member of Congress can do that. You can advocate for change, but you don't make the laws. And that was my civics lesson.
Yeah.
And so I then went back to the library. My father helped me to pull out all of the addresses for every single member of the House and Senate Armed Services Committees.
Wow.
And I wrote them typewritten back then, a letter, a personal letter saying, hey, I'm 13 or I'm 12 years old. This is what I want to do. I really think you should repeal this law. And I sent it out, you know, 50 some, 60 some letters to all these members.
Wow.
And including my own senator, right, Mitch McConnell. I never got a letter back from him. And I also sent it to my own congressman here in Kentucky. He did write me back. His name was Jim Bunning. He later became a senator. He wrote me back a letter, which I still have today, that basically said, if you read between the lines, you're a girl, go do something else. And I got several letters back on that said, you know, that same thing. We're not going to change the law. The military doesn't need this. You can go be a Navy nurse. I got several letters back on the other side that said, you know, our military exists to fight and win the nation's wars, and we should have the best people in those positions. And if you're good enough and you qualify, you should be able to be given a shot. And Jen, that was my first understanding of the differences between the political parties.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because one side was saying no change. We like things the way they are. And the other side was saying, you know, if you're good enough, you should be able to be given a shot. And we're okay with that change. And I did not know what political party my parents were. I never asked. But at that moment, I recognized it. You know, I recognized what I was.
Yes.
And I got lucky because in 1992, I was a senior in high school. We had a new administration. We had an election. We had more women elected to Congress than ever before in history. We had a new president in President Clinton come into power. And he did not open, and Congress rescinded the law in early 1993, which was amazing. But of course, in standard Clinton fashion, he did not open all jobs
yes.
to women at that point. He opened some. And it just so happened that the one that I wanted to do was now open. So submarines, tanks were still closed. Infantry was still closed. Artillery was still closed to women. And by the way, remained closed to women all the way till the second Obama administration. But Navy ships and aircraft, and including fighter jets, were all open in 1993. And that was the time that I left to join the United States Naval Academy, and I never looked back.
Wow. And you served multiple tours of duty, both in Afghanistan and Iraq. It seems like ancient history for many people. You know, my kids, you know, born in the late 1990s and the early 2000s, you know, don't have firsthand memories of the beginning of those wars. When you look back on that time, you know, there is a political reality that those wars may not have worked out as policymakers intended, but there was also the reality of your service, other people's service and sacrifice. Looking back on that, how do you reconcile your service and the losses some of people who you serve with and you knew well? How do you kind of put those things together?
I think, Jen, it's a mixed bag. On the one hand, our country has not been attacked by radical Islamic jihadists in the manner that we saw on 9/11.
Exactly.
And I am part of and being proud that we defended and stood up and made sure that that didn't happen. You know, at least to this day, today. On the other hand, you know, the failures to create, you know, a democracy in Afghanistan, to secure that nation, in having a government other than the Taliban, and the losses that we had there were tremendous. I lost friends there. Iraq, you know, the idea that we could create a Jeffersonian democracy in the Middle East, given the history and culture of that country, is also difficult to think about today, including the losses of my friends there. And then on top of it, to me, the fact that after 9/11, there was a very small group of people, about 1% of America, that sort of ended up sacrificing and going into these wars, and the failure of leadership by the administration at that time to basically not ask the American public to do anything.
Right.
We're so supposed to put the wars on a credit card.
Yeah.
Right. We didn't raise taxes. We didn't tell the American people to really have any skin in the game.
Right.
And that was really angered me.
Right.
To the point where I when I came home from my third combat tour, you know, I really wanted to go to Washington to understand how that could happen.
Right.
And I still don't really know. I think that a lot of it is about the character of the leaders that we have. And that's why, you know, Donald Trump is so scary.
Yeah, too. No kidding.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar. With a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry, IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
You know, it's funny, as much as I, you know, am knee deep in all of this stuff and I'm so conscious of the threat of Donald Trump, deep down, I remain optimistic. And people ask me why. I'm not quite sure. But I am optimistic, maybe because I think young people are more educated and more empathetic and perhaps less biased than older generations. But I also think ultimately people want a decent, good government. When you travel around the country, I mean, are people really comfortable with the idea that we would, you know, let Vladimir Putin overrun, you know, an ally? Are they proud of kind of the rhetoric you hear from Donald Trump? Or do you sense that there is something fundamental still in the American character that wants something better, that wants to be proud of their president?
I think it's the latter. Now I certainly know that there are people that are proud of Donald Trump and think he's the greatest thing. I mean, they're out there, but I don't think it's the majority. And I do believe people care about America's place in the world. You know, you drive around where I live in Fort Mitchell, Kentucky, and you drive around Georgetown, Kentucky, and Edgewood, Kentucky, and all these small towns near where I live. You see up banners up on lampposts of veterans, people who fought from, you know, World War II, Vietnam, Korea, all the way to today, different pictures. They're honoring their local veterans, some of whom, you know, may be long gone.
Right.
People are inherently patriotic. They love this country. They love what we stand for. They believe in America. They may not understand what Article 5 of NATO is, but people believe America is exceptional. Now, some are the J.D. Vances of the world. I get it. Some are like that. But the majority is not. The majority wants America to be strong, to stand for freedom, to be the country that other countries look up to. And those of us that have served in the military know this even more. Why? Because we have been to those countries. We have talked to those people who look at America as, wow, you guys got it good. Your courts aren't corrupt. You can own property here. You can have a good job here. It's not just about economy. It's what we stand for. It's what we are. And so I think those of us that serve really do get that.
Right.
And, you know, I don't believe that people are super proud of Trump. They may not really like Joe Biden. But I think that the stuff is going to hurt in the long run. I believe that Trump's felony conviction, the fact that he's a felon, is right. going to hurt him. I saw a truck on the freeway here in Kentucky with a sign just a couple days ago saying, "I'm voting for the felon." And my husband and I laughed at that, you know, because we're like, yeah, there are crazies out there. But here's the thing. Eric, my husband and I both talked about it and we're like, man, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that poster. Why? Because it's reminding the rest yes. of Americans that they're voting for a felon.
Exactly. Exactly.
So go put that sign up, bro.
Right. Exactly. You know? Exactly. And I think sometimes we get inured to it, numb to it, because it's so much. He does so many outrageous things. But I think also, if you bring it back down, would you want your daughter going to work for a guy who is adjudicated as a rapist in a civil case? Would you want to hire for your business somebody who is convicted of falsifying business records? It's bizarre. And yet, people would be prepared to put him in the most important job, arguably in not only the country, but in the world. So I think sometimes we get too wrapped up in very, you know, complex policy arguments or all of these little nuances, and you kind of have to bring it back down to kind of some basic, you know, criteria. One thing that I want to end on today is to talk a little bit about this kind of isolationist philosophy that somehow if we stay away from the rest of the world, we can be rich and happy here. But we sell stuff overseas and we buy stuff from overseas, and it isn't that simple. Talk to the audience a little bit about the connection between American prosperity and our international leadership, and what happens when we don't stand up for things like free trade, things like, you know, territorial integrity. What happens if we let bad guys, you know, bomb canals, close waterways, clog up, you know, the Suez Canal and the rest? Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, Trump would absolutely wreck America's leadership role in the world. And this is the role that the Greatest Generation gave to us, handed to us. And, you know, this is what has undergirded our entire economic power that we have gained. Anybody that studies American history or American grand strategy knows when America became super powerful right after World War II. And it was not just the military. It was not even just our economic power. It was also our ideas. Okay, that idea of freedom. And we have to protect that. That has number one, kept the world safe and secure for the last 75 years. We haven't had a major war between major powers, which, by the way, would be a nuclear war, which would basically annihilate the world. So we shouldn't move from that strategy. And the other thing is we have to protect things like the global commons. You know, the global, what is that? That's space. That's the sea lanes. This is kind of the world's, the sort of international order that we have built, that you can't just go and take over another country's shipping vessel because you want to, that you can't just invade a neighbor because you have nuclear weapons and they don't. You can't just take over that country. It's basically, you know, do we want to go back to a world where might makes right? And that kind of world is extremely scary when you have people like Vladimir Putin and Chinese President Xi. You know, they don't have the same philosophy of freedom that we have and human rights. Now, America is not perfect. We know this. We're not perfect even here at home. We continually struggle to make ourselves a more perfect union. But I'll tell you what, I want to live in a world where if you want to be a democracy, if you want to have freedoms, if you care about human rights, if you care about women's rights, if you want to have some of that basic stuff, that you can thrive, that you can be that country that wants to have that and actually make it happen. I want to live in that world. And if we go back to isolationism, like I said at the very beginning, we tried that strategy twice. Didn't work. World War I was the result. And World War II was the result. Millions of Americans dead. We don't want to go back there.
I cannot say it any better than that. If people want to help elect veterans, members of the military, what should they do?
Well, I have two different PACs. One is called Honor Bound, which helps women who have served in the military. Because I think, one, we need more people who have served in the military to be in Congress, but we need more women yes. in Congress too. So this kind of does both. And then my other PAC is really a pro-democracy PAC that is called Democratic Majority Action PAC. And that is, you know, it started out making, you know, after January 6th, going after people that, you know, tried to have an insurrection on our country and make sure that those people don't get elected. So it's focusing right now on making sure that Donald Trump doesn't get back in the White House. But we also help pro-democracy candidates down the ballot.
Fabulous. We will put links for those in the show notes. And thank you for all that you have done, all that you're doing. Thank you for your service. And thanks for coming on the show. It was an absolute pleasure.
Awesome. And what you do is really important, getting the word out and talking about this stuff with Americans. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ Mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
And that was Amy McGrath. What an impressive and admirable person, and a reminder that we now have a volunteer military, and it depends upon the sacrifices, the selflessness of people like Amy and her former colleagues, and the ongoing commitment of Americans to put their lives at risk. And that, I think, is what is so maddening. We're not asking the average American any longer to go to war. We're not asking them to storm the beaches or to carry out bombing raids. We're simply asking them to support the values that Amy and others have fought for and put their lives on the line to defend. And I think the notion that we can somehow abandon our traditional values and still maintain our security and maintain our standing in the world is folly. Amy understands that. I think she gives an impassioned plea for the United States to maintain our international leadership, to remain vigilant, but also to remain true to our values. Donald Trump will not do that. He is not a fit commander-in-chief. He has disparaged the military, and he will continue to do the same. Worse, he will not have people who are even remotely dedicated to preserving our values and the military. There will be no Jim Mattises. There will be no Mark Espers. There will be people who are much, much worse and much more willing to do things that are unconscionable in the eyes of most Americans. So it's quite a choice we will have. And I ask you once again to do your best. That means voting, getting people to vote. That means volunteering, getting other people to volunteer. And that means using your platforms to advocate for American values, democratic, small d, democratic values, and to maintain your optimism. So that's all for today. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ Mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition. Great mission. Go to iqbar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's iqbar.com, promo code KELLER20.